From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1993 with the release of a film called The Joy Luck Club. It was a film about the relationships between Chinese-American women and their Chinese mothers. It did pretty well at the box office, earning $10.5 million, and it grabbed some critical praise as well. Now, before The Joy Luck Club, the previous film to feature a majority Asian cast telling a contemporary Asian-American story was 1961, a movie called The Flower Drum Song. And at the time The Joy Luck Club was released, it was thought that this would lead to an opening of Hollywood to the Asian experience, to the Asian American experience. Though, as you might guess, this did not really happen. Hollywood tends to go several decades between films with primarily Asian leads in movies that aren't about martial arts. 25 years after Joy Luck Club, we have Crazy Rich Asians, and it's already a smash at the box office. It's a rather traditional romantic comedy, and all of the leads, there are many, are Asian or Asian American. Is this time different? Writing for the Washington Post, Allison Chu says this is the film she has waited for her entire life. This hour, a conversation about representation and whether this movie is any good, by the way. I saw it last night. We had a lot of fun with a chance to talk to our guests before the hour began about what they thought. They're going to tell us now what they think of the film and what they think of the issue of representation. So hello to Lynn Phillips, creator of the Sriracha Says blog. That's how you probably know her. She's also Consumer Insights Manager at Constellation Brands. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Joanne Bernardi is here, a professor of Japanese and Film and Media Studies and head of the Japanese program at the University of Rochester. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And also with us is Regina Borelli, who is a high school student at Brighton High School. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
You've all seen the film, so I'm going to start with just kind of a fun question. If you think it was any good. Was it any good?
I loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I personally think I went through all the waves of emotions. I laughed. I cried. I just felt like a really overwhelming sense of just, you know, confidence when I left. It was the first film where I just felt like they're telling my story. And it felt really cool to watch a movie that felt like it was made for people like me and that it just kind of embodied a lot of things throughout my childhood and growing up, too. So super, super funny rom-com. I would say definitely go see it.
So your story, so you're married to an uber-rich real estate scion?
You know, I am. No. I think for me, it was more just being like the protagonist, being an Asian American,
yeah,
you know, someone who is straddling like the duality of, you know, being part of this, you know, coming from being a first generation Vietnamese American and kind of straddling the cultures of being growing up with traditional parents, but then living in a world of, you know, trying to become Americanized in that sense, too. So, no, not the rich part.
I kid. But I kid. And when, you know, when you say, as we said at the top, it's kind of a traditional romantic comedy. I thought in some ways it was tremendous fun. In some ways I'm going, oh, man, I know it's going to happen next year. But that's what every romantic comedy is. And I take Lynn's point here. I mean, this is just a film that had so many, it was a big cast and interesting backgrounds, which we're going to talk about in just a moment here. Joanne, what did you think of the film?
I found it really refreshing. I was just telling Lynn before we came up here that in a way it kind of reflected my reality too, because I lived in Asia for three different times for about 10 years. And so I know what it feels like to be a minority white person in Asia. And the first thing I did when I came home from the movie was I tweeted, you know, it was great seeing a movie where, you know, all the white people were extras. And that was just very, very refreshing to me. It's just a reminder that, you know, anybody can be a minority somewhere.
And Joanne, this is a pretty hip movie for you to go see. How did you get convinced to see it? What's the story?
My daughter, she came to me and said, you know, there's this preview of a movie that's showing. I want to see it, Crazy Rich Asians. And I just heard the title and I just thought, oh, God, this is not the stereotype of Asian American or Asian identity that I would have wished. But I didn't know anything about the story.
You were worried about stereotypes.
I was worried about stereotypes. It just sounded very shallow. I'd seen the book. She also had asked me to take her to Barnes & Noble so she could buy the second two books in the trilogy. So I knew she was really interested in it and very invested in it. So I said, okay, I'll go. And so I was completely taken aback by how much I actually learned quite a bit from it. It was really quite a good experience.
Regina, how old are you?
I'm 15.
And 15. And so what drew you to the books and to this film? Why were you so invested in it?
So online, on social media, I could see people talking about it. And so I decided to see what the trailer is like. And after that, I thought it sounded something like interesting. And also with like the Asians as like an all Asian cast, as an Asian American who has not seen an all Asian cast movie since I was born, I thought it was something that was very interesting. I really wanted to like dive into it. And so I decided to read the book, which I did. And I thought it was really good. And I wanted to see the movie. And then so I told my mom about it. And then we ended up seeing it, and I really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed the book. And I still have to read the two other ones, but I have high hopes for both of them.
We've got clips. We'll play clips coming up in just a moment here, but I want to touch on something that Professor Bernardi brought up, which is this notion of what stereotype looks and sounds like. Because you've got a lot of think pieces being written about this film, and I mentioned from the Washington Post, Allison Chu, wrote a piece about this, and let me go ahead and just read some of what she writes about this notion of, well, if you see Asians or Asian Americans in a film, here's the role they're expected to play, even in films that aren't about martial arts. So she writes for the Washington Post, quote, "Being Chinese American, I grew up watching movies and TV shows with characters who looked like me but didn't act like me. One of them was Lawrence, the nerdy Chinese student in the 2003 film School of Rock. He was bespectacled, soft-spoken, and insanely good at the piano. Another was Lucy Liu's character Joan Watson in the popular CBS crime procedural Elementary. And I can't forget Ang Lee's epic 2000 film, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It was the first movie with an all-Asian cast that I watched. Every character seemed to be a martial arts master. As I kept seeing these characters, I became more acutely aware of how I didn't fit those molds as defined by Western pop culture. I was so bad at piano, my teacher recommended I quit. I almost fainted in AP biology when I had to dissect a cat, and I have never once attempted to learn a martial art. I'm a journalist. Well, now the movie I've wanted my whole life has arrived." End quote. She's talking about the stereotypes as she experienced them in pop culture. What's a stereotype when you think of Asian American stereotypes in Western media? Maybe even in daily life, what do they look and sound like?
Yeah, I think I can identify a lot with what Allison said. And, you know, growing up, too, I think, you know, there were Asian characters, but I don't know if I truly identified with them. And I think about even like movies like Mulan or Margaret Cho was the first comedian that I saw, too. But typically watching movies growing up, I think they've kind of all hinged upon whether it's like a martial arts type of character, whether it's a nerd, whether it's a villain or someone tragic. And I think it's been more stereotyped someone who's good at math and just those like classical stereotypes that I feel like in this day and age we know, you know, aren't true, but they still reside and people still think of them. And I think that's what's so great about Crazy Rich Asians is that it breaks the mold and it normalizes and kind of defies those stereotypes. And it shows these characters can be, you know, they can be emotional, they can be unapologetic, they can be showcasing this wide range of characters that's, as I mentioned, normal and not falling in or falling victim to a punchline or a stereotype.
Hmm. Joanne, what are some of the stereotypes beyond that we've already discussed that would have really bothered you? I know you were concerned about that going in.
I think with stereotypes of Asian people that I've thought of in the past, it's always a depiction of an Asian person or Asian story where there's somewhere embedded in the story a norm of whiteness. And so the Asian aspect of those characters or those characters' stories becomes somehow secondary to this kind of sometimes only very subtle white norm that's also embedded in the story. And this just wasn't there. I mean, you and I think several people have written about this. You know, this film starts with two white characters who you do not want to have identification with at all, whether you're white or not white. I mean, they're just, you know, clearly racist and they're despicable. And that's really all that you see of whiteness through the movie. And then you're really basically just watching a film about people. And they're people who you can understand within their own culture, within the norms of their culture. You don't start thinking about, well, how does this measure up, you know, to the kind of hegemonic idea of whiteness in the world. So I think back on the way Asians have been portrayed in film history in the United States. You know, in the silent period, you had people like, well, the two biggest icon stars were Seshu Hayakawa in the silent period and Anna May Wong. And they both really were kind of forced into the roles that they had, where Hayakawa was very handsome. He had a lot of sexual allure. He ended up always playing a kind of villain, a kind of dark, exotic, dangerous, you know, the danger of the East. Anna May Wong, too, became kind of cornered into being the dragon lady. There's the famous story of her wanting to have the star role in The Good Earth, and she was denied it because they felt that it needed to be a white actor, because the male lead in the film was a white actor, and you couldn't have a romance between an Asian character and a white character because of the miscegenation laws. So they offered her instead the role of the evil Asian woman. And she said, no, you know, you want me, the only person in the cast who has real Chinese blood, to play, you know, the dragon lady? I'm not going to do it. So there have been so many limitations on Asians within, you know, film, and not just in the silent period, but going on, you know, into the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Fu Manchu, Charlie Chan. You think of Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's. Yeah. I mean, it just goes on and on, all the way up to Emma Stone in Aloha. Always there's that norm of whiteness that's inserted in there very artificially. And this just wasn't there. It just wasn't there.
Sounds like you're surprised.
I am really surprised. I really am. I'm surprised that they pulled it off, I think, with a lot of aplomb. I think it was a very well-made film. And I think they were in a very difficult position. And I think we've seen that from the criticism, where people have said, yes, but it doesn't show this, it doesn't do that, it doesn't do this and that. Well, you know, no one film can do everything.
Yeah.
But what it does what it says it's going to do, and it does what it says it's going to do very well, I think.
Let me ask Regina what you think of when you think of what a stereotype might look like in Western media, or what you encounter.
With the stereotypes, it's very, like, structured. Well, maybe not structured, but it's like it's all, like, one thing, and there's no, like, diversity or anything with, like, these stereotypes. It's just, we're all, like, the Asians are portrayed as, like, a very, like, smart and, like, prodigy, and they always have, like, an accent, and they are, like, these martial arts, like, people, and they just, there's no, like, diversity in, like, how Asians actually are, and I think the Western media just didn't understand that until, like, now that they actually, with Crazy Rich Asians, they actually show that the diversity of that there are more types of Asians, not just that one stereotypical Asian. And I very much enjoyed that, to see that there's more people that are kind of like me. I'm not like a prodigy. I'm not like a violinist virtuoso, you know? And like, it's just nice to see that there's other, that people understand that there are other Asians besides that one Asian that has been shown for like decades upon decades.
I want to welcome Eleanor Leneau to the panel, who, like Regina, was at Brighton High School, and last we encountered Eleanor, now a sophomore at the University of Rochester. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
You've seen the film.
I have. I absolutely loved it.
You did love it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we're getting everyone's takes, not only on the film, but on how you thought the film did vis-a-vis the typical Western stereotyping of Asian culture or Asian ideas, sort of what white Hollywood thinks Asian culture looks like on screen. So you liked the movie, first of all. Why did you like it?
I mean, I loved it because, I mean, like you said, you can see all these different types of Asians, and not only the rich Asians, but we had the main character's mom, who was just I think she was a seamstress or something. She had a clothing store. I love the diversity of the Asians, and I also really appreciated how there were not only full Asians, but half Asians from all across the globe cast. Like, I think the male lead was half Malaysian, half British, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And as a half Asian myself, that was really cool to see some representation on screen.
Now, when it comes to those stereotypes, Hollywood so often has either done something really racist like the Mickey Rooney stuff in Breakfast at Tiffany's, or just, you know, sort of the narrow box of what representation would look like. You know, violin master, martial arts. That may be it, what Hollywood has done. Were you worried about that going in, or were you pretty confident that this film was going to change that, kind of blow that wide open?
Well, I was pretty confident because I kind of came in viewing it as a sort of Asian Black Panther. So I put a lot of confidence in the directors, and knowing that the whole cast was actually Asian gave me a lot of confidence. And I don't know, I in terms of Asian representation, I think Hollywood is doing a bit better because we saw Rose in Star Wars, which was pretty awesome. She was not stereotypical at all. And now we have Crazy Rich Asians. And I think it's great. We don't usually see Asians as rich in Hollywood. We usually see them as, you know, poorer or like immigrants who are just trying to work hard, which is one version of Asian American, but there are so many other types.
So let's listen to a clip from the film if we could, because I want to play a clip from the character who I thought stole the movie, which was Awkwafina. She plays the main character, Rachel's former college, I think college roommate and close friend, who's still living in Singapore. And so when Rachel, our heroine in the film, ends up in Singapore realizing, oh my gosh, my boyfriend's family is not just loaded, but like famously wealthy, she's got to pick out a dress, and this is the scene in which Awkwafina's character is advising her, you better know what you're getting into. Let's listen.
Rachel, these people aren't just rich, okay? They're crazy rich. Look, there's new money all over Asia. We got the Beijing billionaires, the Taiwan tycoons, but the Young family, they're old money rich. They had money when they left China in the 1800s, and they went all the way down here. Not there. Here. They came to Singapore when there was nothing but jungle and pig farmers. It was a snake here eating an apple. You know what I mean? And they built all of this. Now, they're the landlords of the most expensive city in the world. Here you go. These people are so posh and snobby, they're snoshy. Ew.
Yeah, but Nick's not like that.
Even if he isn't, I guarantee you the family is. Which is why tonight, you need to not look like Sebastian of the Little Mermaid.
and that's one of the more innocuous clips that we could cut from her. She's amazing in this film. But panel, disagree with me if you want. I thought she was what I loved the most about this film. But,
me too. She was my favorite character.
Yeah.
Although I did also really like the relationship between what was her name again?
Rachel
and her mother.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Oh, certainly. No. I would never doubt that.
But Awkwafina did steal.
I'm just talking about scene stealing.
Yeah.
And Oliver's character, I just thought there was a lot of texture, a lot of very as our guests have been noting, a big variety of roles, mm-hmm. identities, backgrounds, wealth, poverty, immigrant. You know, at one point, Rachel, who is spends so much of this movie trying to get her would-be mother-in-law to like her or at least appreciate her, the mother-in-law is sort of making it clear. She calls her, at one point, calls her an immigrant. And mm-hmm. here you have Rachel, who is Chinese-American, growing up in the United States, dealing with issues of identity in the United States. You know, are you an immigrant? Are you an American? What do people assume about you? Then she goes to Singapore and is kind of called an outsider, a foreigner at one point is called. What did you make of that, Lynn? I mean, that was a really sort of textured cultural moment there.
Yeah, that part I could identify with a lot. I think Awkwafina said to her, you know, you're yellow on the outside but white on the inside. She called her a banana.
I had never heard that term, by the way.
I've been called that before.
I feel like it's something that, you know, someone who's kind of having that duality between two cultures, right, is feeling like you're not Asian enough. Or, you know, for me growing up, like I wasn't Asian enough with my Asian friends. I wasn't white enough with my white friends kind of thing. And that kind of sinking feeling. And I think Rachel portrayed that really well because she, you know, grew up from a, you know, Chinese immigrant mother and kind of had this dual culture, but then came to Singapore and, you know, Nick's mother was very, very traditional, and she didn't meet those standards. And so I think it's something and a representation that we don't have the dialogue enough about. It's there, and I've talked about it many times with my other friends. And whether you're Asian or not, when you have come from different cultures and you're trying to really try to like identify yourself in a place. Like, it's kind of a coming of age, a coming awareness of who you are, and that it's okay to have two different parts to you, and that you don't have to be, you know, meet the standards of being Asian enough. So I thought they did a really nice job of like seeding and planting the seed for that topic. And it was just a really beautiful moment, I think, to like talk about that, Awkwafina and Rachel having that conversation, because when she said that, I'm like, I can totally relate to that. I grew up, you know, in Rochester in more of a predominantly white suburb. And when I graduated, I had like 400 students and maybe like a handful of them were Asian. And then going to college, totally different culture shock, ended up becoming the president of my Asian Awareness Sorority, embracing Laotian, Malaysian, Filipino, and just meeting so many people from different walks of life. It just changes your aspect and kind of reflection of who you are.
That notion of being enough, though, Lynn, really is really difficult to understand for someone like me. I mean, I've never had to grapple with that. And in this film, I thought the film could have caricatured the wealthy mother, Nick's mom. I thought they gave her just enough nuance, because she's kind of the villain of the film, but at the same time, what she's making clear is individualism and chasing individual freedom and happiness versus duty to family and stability. And that is an interesting push-pull, where it got to the point where she felt like the villain is where she's telling her, you're not enough, you know, you're never enough for this family. I mean, it's not wealthy enough, but not, you know, sort of pedigreed enough, but also, you know, not enough in terms of the culture and our history and ethnicity. And people deal with that all the time. People, we have had people on this program who talk about having an African-American father and a white mother, and being told you're not white enough, you're not black enough. But for a white audience, I think it's really instructive just to kind of watch and listen, because you're saying you're kind of laughing at the Awkwafina line about the banana, but it hit home. What do you want sort of white audiences to take from that?
Yeah, I think for me, I want people to just kind of walk away and not box Asians all into one category, right? And I think even from the title, Crazy Rich Asians, people think, you know, people have often asked me, not knowing I'm Vietnamese, but asking if I speak Chinese or Japanese, and kind of boxing into this category that all Asians alike. And I want them to take away just the dynamics of our culture, and that, you know, while this movie is a great movement and a great step for representation, it's not going to be the solve for Asian representation. And that, you know, this is the green light for more stories to come, for more movies to come, and to walk away just getting educated, having that dialogue, talking to people, asking them about their culture, and just not judging them on where they came from, but where they're going.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in our second half hour, the question of the green light for more to come, because 25 years ago, a lot of critics said, well, Joy Luck Club opens the door. Nothing happened. So we will talk about what it means to not only have a one-off success, but culturally change Hollywood, change Western media, which should probably take its cue just from the box office numbers from Black Panther or Crazy Rich Asians, that can make money too, actually, not just going with traditional representation or sort of the lazy tropes that they've always had. Eleanor, as you said, as someone who's half Asian yourself, that those moments in the film when the question of enough, how much do you relate to that?
That definitely really hit me hard, because I just studied abroad in Japan, which is my mom's home country, for 2 months over summer. And I stayed with my family a lot, and it was wonderful, but there were definitely a lot of moments where I felt a little on the outside, just simply because I'm half white, and sometimes when you're abroad, you feel like you're just a foreigner, even though you're ethnically that race. And like you were saying, when I'm in the United States, I feel Asian. In the United States, I'm basically Asian, and in Japan, I'm white. And in neither place am I half Asian, am I truly what I am? And that feeling of not being enough is definitely something I related to.
What do you, sort of a weird question, but what do you do with that to work through this feeling of, when I'm here, I'm Asian, when I'm there, I'm white, but neither sometimes feels like enough?
I realize that feeling of not being enough is only present when I'm around people who point it out. So when I'm with true friends here and family, it's not really an issue, but it definitely is something that I feel strongly when I was on the subway in Tokyo, for example, and I would be the only foreigner looking person in the train car, or when I'd be at in high school, when I'd be like the only Asian person in my class, and somebody would be talking about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and then they would ask me my opinion on it. Like, those are the moments where you feel definitely like you're sticking out quite a bit.
That's why a film like this, I've had some listeners say, well, why did you focus on Black Panther? Why are you talking about Crazy Rich Asians? It's 2018. Like, get over it. People love to just, usually white people, love to just get over it, right? But let's be honest. This country is really kind of re-grappling with multiculturalism mm-hmm. in ways at times that are really uncomfortable mm-hmm. and at times that go straight to the words from the White House. That's what's, I don't think that's hyperbole. Do you, John?
Not at all. No. I mean, I think this really is a intense moment for thinking about the complexities of race in this country. You know, an Asian American history in particular has a very difficult history in this country. It does not get taught. We don't talk about it. There's a whole lot that people don't know about, you know, certain things. We still use ambiguous words, for example, for the internment of Japanese Americans. It's internment. It was incarceration. They were camps with barbed wire and armed guards. So it's, you know, and I think these things, and certainly it was the whole Muslim ban that brought up feelings of really kind of post-traumatic stress disorder for a lot of Asian Americans who remember that time. And so, you know, we kind of are reliving our past in a way that we can see that past so much more clearly for what it was, if we want to. If we do open our minds up to receiving it in that way. And I love what's been said here about, you know, the diversity of Asians. And this was one of the criticisms that was lobbied at the movie, was that there was not enough diversity. It's not, you know, Asians does not mean just East Asians. Well, within the United States, usually Asians does mean East Asians, unfortunately, because that's just the history of immigration in this country. But you know, there has been this tendency in the United States forever to, you know, use Asians interchangeably. You know, what's Chinese? What's Japanese? Whenever I collect things off the internet that are Japanese, and it's like I see so often the sellers like question mark Chinese, Japanese, geisha. It's a woman. It must be a geisha. So you know that kind to have that kind of question in this day and age. I mean, I even remember myself as a kid in the '60s looking at a map of and I'm embarrassed, but you know, when I was like 10, I didn't know what I was going to do for a living. So I guess I can be, you know, forgiven. But I remember thinking, oh, Japan, that's the island off of China. You know, that was kind of my, and this is in geography class. You know, I was trying to make sense of the map on the wall. And so we have, I mean, the story going back to the silent period with Hayakawa, Seshu Hayakawa, when his character in The Cheat, the 1915 film The Cheat, where he plays this really terrible villain character, the Japanese Americans protested against that. The film was withdrawn from circulation. 2 years later, in 1918, put back into circulation. And at that point, Japan was an ally of the United States after First World War. So they changed his character into a Burmese ivory king and renamed him Haka Arakao. I mean, this idea that you can just sort of interchange Asian. I mean, he's wearing a kimono. His room is just filled absolutely everywhere with Asian-looking, Oriental-looking tchotchkes. So you don't know what he is, really, except he does have, you know, a Japanese kimono on, and there's a lot that really, his name is Tori, which makes you think, okay, he's Japanese. But, you know, this idea that we really don't know what Asian is. It's just sort of like, oh, you know, Asian, and that's a way of sort of putting it off to the side. You know, I don't have to think any further than that. It's, you know, it's over there.
Yeah, American media probably would take a kimono and say, that's Asian, sort of writ large, in the same way they would take a headdress and say, Native American.
Uh-huh.
You know, oh, I don't understand individual tribes or cultures. You know, it's Indian.
That's a really good analogy.
It's lazy. Yeah. And so maybe a film like this helps us move that forward. I also am talking myself in the moment into liking the ending better. I did not like the ending of this movie because I was like, don't be a stereotype rom-com. Don't cliche. Spoiler alerts here. But like, you don't have to get back together. We don't need like this Hollywood ending. You know, they could walk away. And I was like, no, do not get back together. You know, I was kind of rooting against it because I wanted, like, you know, powerful woman, stand up, be yourself, independent, and also get away from cliche and stereotype that Hollywood can't get away from, even in a film like this. But I'm talking myself into it because I like the idea of bridging divides in cultures. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to sort of wax poetic on the questions of multiculturalism, but, you know, damn, the alt-right has done a good job of making people scared of it to the point where I think we have to just be overt and say, if it's hard in places at times, it's our future. It's the world that we live in. And we should be embracing and celebrating diversity. And when there's divides, we should bridge them. So at least the film's ending gives us a little bit of that, bridging the old and the new and the traditional and the independent. And so I've talked myself into it. Do you guys like the ending? I was kind of rooting it.
I personally liked it, but I was going to mention that, like, parts leading up to the ending, like when Rachel and the mother, well, future mother-in-law, had the mahjong scene.
The mahjong.
Yeah.
And
I
thought that was just a really powerful scene. And I thought that represented Rachel as someone who, you know, showcased her mom sacrificing everything she had to, like, give her the life of opportunity and not having to be defined and fit into not feeling good enough. And I thought that was the part was like, yeah.
The movie could have ended right there,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
She
could
have walked out. And roll credits.
I thought that was a great kind of, like, showcase and representation portrayal of Rachel being that strong individual woman. And the other part I was going to say, too, is that they ended up using the song Yellow from Coldplay, but they did it in Mandarin. And that was one of my favorite parts of the ending, was just, like, this beautiful poetic song. But even, like, behind the scenes, like, the director had to fight to get that song and the rights to that song.
Oh, interesting.
Which I thought was really cool because, you know, trademarking and copywriting and all of that. So he actually wrote a sentimental letter to Coldplay telling them, like, what this movie meant for the director, what a movement it would be, and why using the song was so important to them. So those are two things that I think may help you like the ending a little bit better.
Oh, it's great. And the music in the film was awesome.
It was.
The music was really good. The visuals were, I want to go to Singapore.
I
want to eat the food. I mean, like, this just, there was a lot to really, really love. Just a lot of great eye candy. And I'm talking about the visual scenes here. Now I'm starting to sound creepy. There's visual scenes, great cinematography. Let me ask the two students in the room on that question of multiculturalism. And you know, Regina, you're a high school student at Brighton. You know, we're talking about some light stuff, movies. We're also talking about some pretty heavy stuff about multiculturalism and how people feel like they fit. Are you looking at what's going on in this country? Are you feeling less comfortable than you did before? Are you feeling decently comfortable with the future direction we're taking? I mean, how do you feel about it?
Well, I'm in high school, the high school I go to. It's a relatively diverse community, and we have, like, clubs for, like, different ethnicities, and there's an Asian one, too. And I mean, nowadays, I do feel a little bit more comfortable. I mean, before, when I was younger, I was less comfortable with being Asian because I was in a predominantly white area when I was younger, I'd say. And there was times when I didn't feel like, I didn't feel proud to be Asian and I didn't want to be Asian. And nowadays I feel like I'm like proud to be Asian and I'm confident in how I am. And I think people are just like paying more attention to all these, I mean, with the politics and the news, people are paying more attention to all these problems. And I think with the Asian community, I think they're going to start paying more attention, hopefully. And I think with this movie, I think it is a step forward because people are starting to pay more attention that, yeah, we are not, like, just, like, the under people, like, second characters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And that we actually have, like, a stance here in the Western world. And I think people are going to start, like, noticing that we are here. And it just makes you feel good about it. And, yeah, I think people are going to start paying more attention. That, I mean, it's 2018, people, you know, I think they should.
Yeah. Eleanor, how do you feel about that question on sort of our current multicultural state, the future of the country, some of the climate, what you're seeing here and around the world right now?
Well, I have seen a lot of disturbing stuff in the news, and honestly, it doesn't make me more afraid. It makes me less afraid and more motivated to fight. And I think that movies like Crazy Rich Asians are amazing kind of avenues to help people like me who are motivated to begin the fight, to you know, have us all races be realized as equal and great. I mean, throughout history, Asians and movements have been often put to the wayside. For example, in the 1970s feminist movement, when female Asians would want to join feminist groups, often they would be ostracized or would be told to go home and just be quiet like they always are. And I think that now that we have these films that show strong women like Rachel and her stepmother, you know, battling it out, and all these wonderful interfeminine relationships in that movie, I think that's awesome. And that's an awesome thing that is going to provide examples for future feminists and Asian American feminists alike.
There's a complexity of sort of woman-to-woman relationships in this film that were very interesting.
I think that's one of the reasons why the film is successful, is because it does do those complex women relationships. The guys don't come across quite so good. I mean, the groom, obviously, or the you know, prospective groom has not really prepared her for the situation she's working
in. He's been like, she should have been furious with him. By the way, somebody I heard who saw the film said, did she dated him for a year and she didn't Google him?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Didn't figure out that you're like a scion from this wealthy
that
film?
Was a gaping black hole.
There were some plot holes as we talk about Crazy Rich Asians with our guests who are talking about not just the film, but the impact of representation. The first film coming out of Hollywood that's not a martial arts film with an all-Asian or Asian-American lead cast in 25 years. So after our only break, we're going to hear from one of the cast members some of her thoughts on the impact from what she's seeing from audiences. And we're going to get some of the feedback from our panel about whether this really does portend something different now coming out of Hollywood, or if it'll be another 25 years before we see a film like this. That's next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, it's Labor Day, and we have a one-hour special with conversations of the late Paul Burgett. Paul Burgett was a longtime dean, vice president, professor, and lover of history at the University of Rochester and the Eastman School of Music. He passed away recently. You will hear him in his own words and why so many thought he was so extraordinary on Monday. Welcome back to Connections. As Eleanor Leno put it, you might look at Crazy Rich Asians as sort of the Asian version of Black Panther. Is that what you said earlier?
I did say that.
Yeah. No, but it's a film that has full representation, a director, a full cast, that isn't just one character, you know, sort of filling a stereotype, that it's a film with a big cast and diverse storylines, you know, interesting characters, not just stereotypes. And Crazy Rich Asians is doing an amazing thing at the box office right now, and there's probably going to be sequels because there are three books, is that right?
Yeah, it's a trilogy.
Have you read all three?
No, I've only read the first one, but I'm planning on reading the other two.
Okay, so and look, if Hollywood sees money coming in, they will make more of this, so I'm sure we will see that followed up. Let me go ahead and read a couple of comments, and then I want to listen to some more of the comments from one of the stars of the film, but before we do that, first of all, from Time Magazine, this is from their review of Crazy Rich Asians. Quote, there will be other definitions of success beyond numbers. Allison Chu dreams of this movie being repeatedly played. I'm sorry. Who was the author? I've read so many articles. All right, let me go back to this here. This is from Time Magazine. There will be other definitions of success beyond the numbers. Chu dreams of this movie being repeatedly played on a television channel like TBS, and he's heard directly from fans about how it has changed the way they see themselves, including men who tell him they're proud to be an Asian dude, and those who never would have watched a romantic comedy before. But some of the stars hope for a future with, quote, narrative plentitude through a wide variety of creative projects so that one story doesn't have to represent all Asians or all Asian Americans, a world in which the ability to tell stories that represent billions of people won't hinge on just one movie's reception. Constance Wu played Rachel, and she said, when you can be mediocre and still not feel like you have to prove something, that's when you know you've hit success. So that's what Constance Wu, who plays Rachel in the film, has to say. We have a comment from a listener named James on Twitter who says, while the movie did rely on a few romantic comedy tropes, I felt overall it was great. I enjoy movies immersed in other cultures, and this did not disappoint. I agree, Awkwafina is just awesome. This movie will hopefully set the foundation for Asian Hollywood cinema to come. Well, on that subject, Awkwafina was talking to Jimmy Kimmel about why this has impacted people the way it has and what's next, and let's listen.
If you think about it, that's a 25-year-old adult that is just walking around without representation.
Right.
You know, and I mean, it's so impactful for Asian Americans. Asian Americans come out of the screenings and they're, you know, crying and they don't know exactly why. And I think it's the power of representation.
So that's Awkwafina talking to Jimmy Kimmel, and again, referencing that 25-year gap is the idea that if you were born after 1993 in this country, you've never seen a film like this. The last one was Joy Luck Club. And that emotion, Lynn, is that hyperbole, or do you think that's really realistic?
No, I think that's fair. I think, I like I mentioned before, I laughed, I cried, I got all the feels, and I felt really overwhelmed because I think I had mentioned before that I was able, like, there was things in that movie that resonated so deeply. And Constance Wu tweeted something that was something like, I hope that, you know, Asian American kids remember that they get to be the heroes to their own stories. And I think that's such, like, a powerful statement to say, because this is the time. This is the way that we can pave our way and start to make our own stories. And so I, like, wholeheartedly love what Awkwafina said, not only because she's hysterical, but but yeah, I totally agree about representation, and that, you know, while this can't be the defining movie for everything, I think, you know, our day and age is craving more real, more authentic types of stories. Mm-hmm. And versus 25 years ago, we have the platform now, right? Back then, we didn't have Twitter, and it wasn't as, you know, Instagram and Facebook and, like, instant as it is now. And even just, like, behind the scenes, like, the aftermath of the movie, I think it's a testament to how strong and, like, how this is going to change much more so. And we're not going to wait for 25 more years till a new Joy Luck Club comes
out.
Well,
let me follow up with that and ask all of you this, because to Constance Wu's point there, it was a lot of pressure on this film that if it didn't meet up, you know, sort of a box office standard, or if critics didn't like it, or if something really kind of went wrong with it, it was like, well, I guess we'll never make a film like this. They felt like that. In the same way that you heard the cast of Black Panther talking about the pressure, because Hollywood, you know, you can have a million Seth Rogen movies flop, or Adam Sandler hasn't made a good movie maybe ever, but, you know, many, many years, but he's still making movies. It doesn't matter. I mean, like, you can make the movies. Constance Wu saying that pressure was real, and success looks like, hey, make a film. If it's mediocre, you can make the next film. I understand that point. But are we going to see that? Do you really believe that this opens the gates here, or are you sort of a skeptic and a wait and see on this?
I think it's going to, and probably already has started to, open the floodgates. I think because of the success even of opening weekend, I'm sure there's movies that are happening in the background, or, you know, stories that are written that have been waiting for, like, some social capital, or, like, the proof is in the pudding, right? Like, the success of this movie has showcased that, you know, this can resonate outside of just minority audiences. So I do think that it has opened the floodgates. More stories will be told. And, you know, will it be a box office success such as this one? That's a wait and see. But I do think it has opened the floodgates, and I'm excited to see what's going to be pouring out.
Joanne?
I agree. And I like what you just said, Lynn, about the, you know, this really does prove that audiences besides just minority audiences can enjoy a film like this. And I think that really is the proof of the pudding. I was thinking of, there's another show that was it Netflix? Regina, you watched
it. The movie.
The one, To All the Boys I've Ever Loved Before.
Yeah.
Which was also based on a book written by an Asian American woman. And she was told over and over again, no, you've got to make the character, I think it's semi-autobiographical or something like that. And she said, you've got to make the main character white, because people won't relate to it. It won't sell. You know, as long as the character has the spirit of the character that you wrote, it doesn't matter what the race is. And her answer was, the spirit of the character that I wrote is Asian American, which I just thought was excellent.
I love that.
You know, really, it's, you know, that's the comeback. And that I think is what really proves the point. that, you know, these stories are stories that everybody can enjoy.
Regina, are you hoping that this puts more on screen like this?
Yeah, Joanne, with Crazy Rich Asians and To All the Boys I've Ever Loved Before, they're both had Asian Americans and Asian cast, and it's became like a popular, the both movies became popular among everyone, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I think it did open the gates to other movies because it's just everybody's like, now that everybody's seeing it, they're more aware, like, oh, okay, yeah, there's Asians. And I think it's more, they're more accepting that there will be other more movies. And so the, like, future movies, I'd say, or, like, writings, I think they're more confident that they can make this happen and it'll more likely to happen. Unlike before, Joy Luck Club, that was, like, the only one. And there was a couple more. And then it's just, like, the couple of Asians in, like, the background. But now everybody's paying attention, everybody's more aware, and a lot more accepting nowadays. So I think it's more likely going to happen.
Are you a believer, Eleanor?
Definitely. I'm really excited for Mulan to come out. I believe Mulan is a mostly all-Asian or all-Asian cast. I mean, it should be.
Yeah, for sure.
Very excited about Mulan. I think we were talking about how social media is an excellent platform for the spread of this excitement. And I agree. As soon as it came out, I Snapchatted every single one of my Asian friends in my Snapchat contacts. And I was like, oh my God, guys, have you seen this? Like, I'm crying. This is amazing. And they snapped back and were so excited. And I've actually bonded with some of my Asian American friends more just from talking about this movie. And I think this buzz is something we've never had before. And I think, like you guys have been saying, I think it's going to spur more films for it to come. And I agree. We're going to have to see if there are more blockbusters. But I personally am hopeful, especially with things like Mulan. Everyone loves Disney. Everyone loves Mulan, you know? So I'm hopeful.
Well, before the hour's up here, Joanne referenced the opening of the film. And the only time you really see white characters. Just for a little background, if you haven't seen Crazy Rich Asians, the film opens with an Asian family coming out of a rainstorm and some of the kids have kind of dirt on their shoes and they go into a fancy hotel in, is it London? Is it London at the time? And
or maybe, is it New York?
No, it's London.
Is it London? Okay.
And so the white hotel managers and everyone from the bellhop and everyone else, they're sort of looking at this family and they had called and made a reservation, but the white managers are saying, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure there's somewhere else you can go. We're full. And then drops the line on them like, you know, I'm sure you can find something in Chinatown. And then it turns out that, bad move, dude. This is the woman who just bought the hotel. You know, so this is your boss now. So it's a nice little turning of the tables. That scene, I found myself hoping was cartoonish and that Asian Americans, Asians, don't experience that with regularity. But boy, is that a white question to ask. And I admit that. I mean, because I just, that's not something that I would ever have to experience. I mean, have you experienced anything like that? Something that overt?
I don't know about that overt, but I would say just, you know, growing up through my childhood and whatnot, like being asked if I eat certain things, like, do you eat dog growing up?
I was
and
just
going like
to say
that. Or like,
people actually asked you that?
Yeah, growing up, yeah. I got teased if I eat dog. I was like the weird kid in school who brought like smelly lunches with fish sauce and whatnot.
Dude,
and
me too.
I think Regina mentioned this before too. Like, part of you feels like you have to suppress your culture a little bit growing up because you don't want to be the odd man out. And so I found myself doing that a lot growing up because I was, you know, growing up with predominantly, you know, white neighborhood. So I wanted to fit in just like everyone else. But I think there's definitely like instances of racism that happen, maybe not so maliciously, that come through your childhood, even like in my adulthood, just been, you know, more ignorant statements of just assuming, again, like bucketing Asians into one category. And then even just like with my parents who, you know, English isn't their first language, so they may speak a little more broken English. And I remember, you know, people making fun of them back when I was growing up, and I just, you know, I didn't understand it growing up, and now I would get super defensive about them, right? So I think probably everyone here, whether Asian or not, has experienced some form of racism. Maybe not as overt as that hotel, but certainly similar feelings that get exuded from there.
Eleanor?
When I was a kid, I relate so hard to the smelly food because I would always bring osembe, which is like these little salty Japanese crackers, and people would point at them and be like, oh my God, are those cookies? And then I'd be like, they're actually not. They're kind of salty. You'll probably hate them. And then they'd steal them from me and eat them, like thinking it was going to be a cookie. And then they'd just gasp dramatically and be like, oh my God, this is so salty. And then I get made fun of for eating fishy cookies. And like you, it's like I've been asked if I eat dogs and cats. And what's weird is sometimes I'm white passing and sometimes I'm not. So it was like the minute people would find out that my mom is a native Japanese woman, they'd start asking me these weird questions. They'd be like, oh, so you're Japanese. Like, you eat dog, right? And I would always say no, but there was one occasion where this little boy insisted that I ate dog, and he insisted that every single piece of meat in my obento box was dog, and it was a lot. But I think the most overt racism is something that I experienced during childhood, which shows you how deeply ingrained racism is into our society, because if children are like that, because children are, you know, the purest form of what we have in our society, that must mean that racism is pretty deeply in there.
Even if we're teaching, like you said, accidentally. I mean, kids are picking up on cues. About 30 seconds, Regina. Any experiences like that for you?
No, I've never been discriminated as harshly as them. Okay. I mean, I've been raised under two white parents, so I wasn't really raised with this Asian part. But I have been stereotyped before. Mm-hmm. I was playing a game, and then I was with someone else, and this other person was just, like, watching, and I wasn't, like, winning yet, but they were like, you're smart, you should win this, aren't you? You're Asian. And I was like, I didn't know what to say after that, but that's about all.
Well, I want to thank our entire panel for coming in. Lynn, Eleanor, Joanne, Regina, really interesting conversation. The film is Crazy Rich Asians. It's killing it at the box office right now, and not only an interesting film, and interesting to think about the implications. Thanks for all for capping a great week for us. I really appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
so
much.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.